Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. This week we bring you the latest episode of the Delaware Humanities podcast, People and Planet. The podcast explores how Delawareans connect to the environments and cultures around them, and the cultural practices and creative works that bring us closer to the planet we call home. On this episode, the podcast focuses on a pair of first date destinations that connect people to their planet by educating them about the world around them. The Delaware Museum of Nature and Science and the Brandywine Zoo each offer windows into habitats in our own backyards and around the world, and how we engage with them in a meaningful and positive way. To explain how they do that, the podcast welcomes Mandy Santiago, Executive Director of the Delaware Museum of Nature and Science, and Brent Spencer, Brandywine Zoo Director. So let's start with, when you guys are thinking about your mission through the lens of connecting people to habitats and the environment around them, what are your top priorities? Are there a North Star or two that guide you and your teams as you try to connect people with the world around them? And Brent, we'll start with you.
Sure. One of the things that we look at is, are there actions that our visitors can take that can help the animals that they're getting interested in? And probably a good example of that is our Madagascar exhibit. We have graphics up there talking about conservation messages, but we also put some things into the exhibit that will hopefully help reinforce that. So we have some artificial stones in the mud bank that are to represent sapphires, and illegal sapphire mining in Madagascar is a habitat degradation issue that impacts lemurs. We have an artificial rosewood stump in there, and rosewood is illegally harvested and used for high-end furniture and guitar frets. Gibson was cited in 2012 for illegally sourced rosewood. So there's purchases that we can make here. We have a coffee tree that we bring out seasonally, and I'm growing a vanilla vine at home. And coffee and vanilla are both exports from Madagascar that people in Delaware can choose to purchase. So you need to make sure that purchases that you're making are legally sourced and benefit both the animals and the people in Madagascar. So we can say, you're excited about lemurs and these cute animals, but here's ways that you can help them in the wild. So what actions can we give our guests to help the animals that they're excited about?
Mandy, how about you? As you think about connecting people to habitats and environments, what are your top priorities? Are there those maybe one or two really important guiding principles that you try to follow?
Absolutely. So our guiding principle is for everyone, when possible, to see, touch, feel, and apply what they've learned at the museum in their own backyard, their own community, and certainly on their big, beautiful planet that we have as they go about their travels. So we try to incorporate hands-on activities, whether that's a live animal demonstration, an actual backyard tour where we're looking for insects, we're studying fungi, we're monitoring the quality of soil and trees in our very own backyard. Every opportunity there is to bring nature to life and make it relatable is something that we relish.
So what you guys are talking largely about is visitor experience and this idea of I guess making it real for people, right, Mandy? Is that maybe kind of what we're talking about here? Is that when people come in, they're not just kind of reading something, you know, a display, that there's something tangible for them to connect to?
That's part of it. The other part is delivering that content in a way that the user wants delivered. So we are mindful that not everyone wants to read a museum sign or join a pre-assigned group tour where we have a set of facts that we're going to discuss. So we're trying to incorporate more opportunities where we utilize QR codes so that people can delve more in depth into a specific topic that they're interested in by making reference to books that are available in our bookstore, but also expert speakers in the field, trying to bring those into the museum so that they have those live interaction opportunities with experts. And one of the other opportunities we're exploring is the use of augmented reality and audio tours. We understand everyone learns differently, and so we're trying to be mindful of how that occurs.
Brent, you talked a little bit specifically about the Madagascar segment of the zoo. What are some of the other things you're doing in terms of visitor experience to kind of bring home some of the things that you're trying to do and really make those connections for people?
Similar to what Mandy had said, we have a pollinator exhibit with a visible beehive. So people come up, see the bees, but then they can look through windows and see a pollinator garden behind it. So they can see the bees going out, sitting on the flowers. They make that connection between the animals and the plants. And then also in there, we have a number of things, including rain barrels and water stations for both birds and bees. So you see how you can make your backyard, whatever your backyard is, a yard, a deck, a porch, habitat for the animals. And we also have QR codes. Our pollinator garden has three different certifications from National Wildlife Federation and Pennsylvania Audubon, so that you can see that you can do these things at home. So get excited about the animals here and then go home. We do educational programs, but again, as Mandy said, not everybody's interested in a formal program. They want to come and experience it in their own way.
Certainly, museums, zoos, all these type of places need to kind of change and grow and evolve over the years. And certainly that's true of both of your places. Can you talk a little bit about some of the changes that have been made in recent years and how you feel they've kind of helped enhance what you do and enhance the connections that you're making for people with their environment around them? Britt, we'll go with you first.
Sure. I think for a long time, people viewed zoos as consumers of wildlife. And that's a true statement. And that's no longer the case. The animals we have are managed appropriately for conservation within the zoo community. But we're also doing a lot of outreach. We are working with animals outside of our perimeter fence. We're supporting wildlife in Madagascar by supporting alley cropping and programs like that. We're working with Delaware Fish and Wildlife. And we're incubating endangered bog turtle eggs here. So right now we've hatched out more bog turtles at the zoo in the past 3 years than there are known adults in the wild. We've got 34 hatchlings from last year, and we're incubating 52 eggs that are supposed to start hatching next week. So we're working outside of our perimeter and starting to take that messaging out so that people understand, we're not just a place with animals in cages. We're doing a lot more than what they see.
And Mandy, I know, obviously the Delaware Museum of Nature and Science kind of did a big rebranding a couple of years ago. What else is going on there in terms of this kind of evolution and change and development and growth of the museum?
Absolutely. Well, back in 2020, there was a significant investment in renovating our physical spaces, and they're absolutely beautiful. I think if anyone hasn't been to the museum, I highly encourage you to do so. But beyond that, we're looking how do we bring the museum to life in other areas or for individuals that can't reach the museum? And one of the ways that we're delivering that is through the mobile museum program, where we literally bring the field trip to you, whether that's in your corporate office, your place of worship, a school or a daycare, even a library. We will come with live animals, live specimens, fossils from all around the world, and deliver that content and hands-on activity in the comfort of your own home, as so to say. The other opportunity that we're taking is really to engage our members and our visitors as to how they would like museum life to live beyond the walls of the museum. And one of the opportunities that we've taken is around workforce development. We appreciate that, especially teens who might age out of some of our museum exhibits at a certain point are looking for that next step. And so we do offer a teen science cafe that is literally designed by teens and aimed for teens in grades 7 through 12. It's an opportunity for them to network with industry leaders. It's an opportunity to socialize and really explore career paths that they may not have considered previously without exposure to visiting the museum and interacting with some of our staff. Breaking into STEAM, which is an annual event that we host, invites Delaware-based employers to encourage and have informational interviews with teens who are maybe not necessarily thinking about their career in that moment, but providing that exposure, again, to different career paths they may not have considered, whether that's in banking or pharmaceuticals or even engineering. So we're looking beyond the walls of the museum to stay in touch, stay relevant, and again, reinforce some of our concepts.
I was going to say what you're both talking a lot about here is the outreach and how important is that to the modern museum, to the modern zoo, especially when it comes to kids and schools, to making it truly vibrant and truly part of the community. Brent, we'll go with you.
It's critical, and we tell people that the Brandywine Zoo is a small facility and always will be, but we have the opportunity to be that first step into nature for a lot of kids. And so being located right in the middle of Wilmington, we're such an urban facility that we have that opportunity. And you look at the exotic animals we have, and one of the things that I'm always impressed and amused with is that our goats are probably one of the most important animals that we have here, because, you know, kids don't have an opportunity to interact with animals the way children did in earlier years. So that opportunity to go in and touch a goat is something that's really special for them, and they get excited, and then they get excited about other animals. So we try and make that connection as much as possible with our living collection.
Mandy, how about you in terms of outreach, and how important is that youth outreach to kids in schools to really making the museum a vibrant place?
It's critical to our work, and it's one of the founding principles of our strategic plan, particularly serving underserved communities. And so we invest quite a bit in providing free or discounted tickets, school field trips, programming tours, but also incorporating some of that virtual education and, again, delivering our on-site content to them. So it's significant to what we do. We're, again, exploring with how we can incorporate technology and virtual programming, even at some point, hopefully launching an online university, if you will, a mini university anyway, so that folks can explore on their own time at their own convenience, and understanding that we're broader than just serving the Wilmington or Newcastle County community. We serve the entire state of Delaware. And so making sure that we have the opportunity to reach audiences in Kent and Sussex County is important to us as well, and something that we're working on.
You mentioned the technology piece, and I'll ask both of you this, you know, how big of a game changer is technology to what you do, whether it's something as simple, maybe it's a QR code, to some of the other things you guys have mentioned, the virtual things, the augmented reality type of things. How big of a game changer is modern technology to what you do? Well, Mandy, you can kind of continue on that thought.
I wouldn't say that it's a game changer anymore. I think it is now the standard. People are interested in utilizing technology, not necessarily moving away from it. And to be honest, it's something that I've spent a good portion of my career trying to do, get kids and adults away from their devices and out in nature. But I feel like I've lost that battle. So now I need to regroup and figure out how I can use that to my own advantage and still provide that educational content in a fun and interactive way, but still utilizing either apps or software, or even moving into the hologram augmented reality world. So I think that's coming soon for us, even though I have mixed feelings about it.
Brent, how about you? I mean, how do you feel about this kind of marriage of technology and what you do, and both, you know, maybe the potential and possible pitfalls?
I'm right there with you, Mandy. You know, I always enjoy when kids come to the zoo and they're not on a screen. You know, here's the real animal. And there was always a thought when nature programs started up on TV that these would be able to replace zoos. And with a television program, you're seeing what the producer wants you to see. But when you come to the zoo, it's real life, and you see and hear and smell, and you get that full experience. One of the things that we're looking forward to, we have a working on a new exhibit at the entrance, which will be flamingos, and looking forward to the opportunity to have people be able to feed a flamingo. So you see, hear, feel that bird filter feeding right in your hand. Having said that, though, you know, we are moving into that technology realm. We're using more QR codes for a lot of our programming. And during COVID, we switched our education programs completely so that we were doing virtual programming just to keep in touch with children, to, you know, keep them engaged and keep them thinking about the zoo and nature.
So I have to ask you about the challenges of this work, and specifically the economic challenges. How difficult is kind of the economics of doing this to delivering on your mission, Mandy? The economics only get more and more challenging.
Unfortunately, yes. I think running a nonprofit in general is challenging, but particularly in today's climate where, in our own experience, we've had grants that were rescinded or grant proposals that were probably funded, but we still haven't received the funding, makes it extremely difficult to plan your cash flow and your business operations and pay bills and make payroll. But we do it, and we are able to do that in part by, one, our admission fees, which I know can be a bit of a grumble for folks, particularly as prices are escalating everywhere else, but they really are a tremendous resource in helping us maintain not just the facility, but delivering some of these programs and educational opportunities. And why annual giving and supporting your local museum is so important, because without you, we really can't do this. Yes, we apply for corporate and foundation support, but I think, as most nonprofits can attest, they too are responding to their own operating budgets and the increased demand for assistance, as all of us are trying to figure out how do we cover one bill to the next. So, very similar to everyone in their probably own individual households, we're trying to figure out where we can scale back and be cost efficient, but we always, always need the support of the community. That's our biggest investment, and we appreciate it.
Bern, how about on your end at the zoo? How challenging is the economics of all this now?
A little bit different than Mandy is, since we're a state-run organization. We have the support of the Delaware state government. Biggest time that showed up for us was during COVID, and we were closed for a while, like everybody else. Once things started opening up, people wanted to be outside. So our attendance was down, but people were starting to come back. But the state park campgrounds were full. So we were able to weather that storm with the support of the state. The Delaware Zoological Society is our nonprofit entity, and they're responsible for our operations and concessions, and they fund our conservation mission. So it's important. Our events are important. Their fundraising is important so that we can keep doing the work that we're doing outside of our facility. The state is responsible for operating the zoo, and the society is responsible for supporting the development and future of the zoo. So those two partners work together to help make everything happen for us.
So I'm curious, how do you guys gauge success? And I guess maybe more specifically, what are you looking for people to walk away with when they complete a visit to either the zoo or the museum? Mandy, we'll start with you.
Obviously, for us, we're driven by attendance or visitation, but really, our goal is to make sure that everyone leaves here learning at least one new thing. And again, taking some of that information that they've learned by being able to see, touch, and feel some of the specimens and applying that in their own backyard. The word of mouth advertising also helps. So for us, that's a huge success when we hear that someone was recommended to us by a neighbor or a friend or even a fellow classmate. So we are extremely grateful that everyone who leaves here learns something, applies it, and then shares that. Really amplifies our message.
Bert, how about you?
We measure success in a number of different ways. Our society looks at attendance and revenue as their measures. Our education department looks at number of programming, and we do evaluations of all of our programming. So, are people enjoying, are people learning from the programs? And then the animal department looks at our husbandry and, in some cases, reproductive success. So the bog turtles that we hatch out, the baby crown lemur that we had born this year, there's only 40 crown lemurs in the country, and we have 10% of the U.S. population here in Delaware. So that's a significant investment and success for an endangered species. So we look at it in a lot of different ways, and fortunately, all the metrics are trending up for us.
Are there some specific things you guys look at when you think about specifically connecting to Delaware and helping people understand the environment and habitats here in Delaware itself? Brett, I think you mentioned a couple of things. Are there some other things that you are really focused on when you're talking about Delaware and its habitats and environment to the people who visit?
Sure. The things we do on grounds, like I said, primarily birds and butterflies and pollinators are things that people get to see. The bog turtles are a conservation message that we're a little bit more guarded with just because the rarity of the animals. We're also working with Fish and Wildlife, and there's a population of copperheads in Alapocas Park. So last year we went out and collected 10 copperheads and put transponders in them, and Fish and Wildlife is able to track those animals through the park. And so we're getting some information on what they're lifestyle and habits are like, so we know where they move, where they hibernate, and we're gaining valuable information on that. And this year we started with some transponder work with Fish and Wildlife on tiger salamanders. So again, another species that we're working, you know, here in Delaware to learn more about.
Mandy, how about you? Looking kind of specifically at connecting people with Delaware and its environment and habitats, are there some things you guys are specifically working on?
I don't think you can connect any more directly with Delaware than our floor map in the regional journey gallery. It literally represents the diverse ecosystems from every aspect of the state, so you can find where you are on that map. And practicing simple things, lifting a horseshoe crab, not a live one, of course, but finding a tree frog or mosquito fish, learning about poison dart frogs. We literally have something for everyone when it comes to what types of plants, trees, animals are native and how you can help support their habitats, again, in your own backyard. So I don't think we make it any more relatable. I encourage you to come here and experience it for yourself.
This podcast is kind of all about, you know, connecting people with the planet around them. And I guess, you know, I'll start with you, Mandy. You know, how do you wrap your head around that concept and the importance of it in this day and age, in a time of climate change and other pressures on the environment? Is it hard sometimes for you to wrap your head around it and also help other people wrap their head around, you know, the importance of the mission that you guys are trying to fulfill?
I don't know that it's hard. I think it just requires frequent reminders. So whether that's planting native trees, whether that's recycling, whether that's being mindful of your electricity and utility use, there are simple things people can do every day to help protect the planet and simple things they can do in their own community to help improve habitat for wildlife. So whether that's building a bluebird box, whether that's planting pollinator-friendly shrubs and flowers, everyone can play a role. It's not expensive, it's relatable, it's possible, and it's doable. And we amplify our success when every single person takes responsibility and ownership for it. So we appreciate those who do, we appreciate those who are trying, and we appreciate those who are brand new and willing to learn and assist.
Brett, how about you picking up on that?
Yeah, and I agree with all of that. And the other thing that we're trying to do is meet people in their spaces. And that's come up a couple times in this conversation. So, you know, how do we get people in and, you know, once they're here, get them excited. So different events like being open late in the evening, sip and strolls, brew at the zoo, will bring people in and then we can reach our message that way. And then it's also the partnerships that we form. And some of them are kind of unusual. One of our staff members was at a restaurant and conversation came up on birds and window strikes. So we're now having conversations with this restaurant on ways that we can help them protect their glass, protect the birds. And it was something that they hadn't thought about. And as that conversation unfolds, we start with window strikes. We talk about pollinator plants around the restaurant. We talk about bird-friendly coffee. And then suddenly you've reached a whole group of people that wouldn't have necessarily had exposure to what we're preaching at the zoo. So it's taking that message and amplifying it as much as we can in different directions.
I agree with wholeheartedly. And one of the opportunities we're trying to pursue here at the museum is around sound bathing, the concept of being in nature, enjoying those sights and sounds, and using that as a stress relieving, anxiety relieving, blood pressure reducing technique, similar to meditation. But for those of us like myself, whose brain never shuts off, I need a little more assistance with that. So bringing in instructors who can help utilize the beautiful grounds that we have, but help people appreciate and relax in nature.
You've been listening to a portion of the Delaware Humanities podcast, People and Planet, with Mandy Santiago, Executive Director of the Delaware Museum of Nature and Science, and Brent Spencer, Brandywine Zoo Director. The full podcast is available at DelawarePublic.org and DEHumanities.org. People and Planet is brought to you by Delaware Humanities, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities.